Welcome back to Apollo City Comics, your anything and everything comic book podcast. I'm Brandon Blocksdorf.
I'm Alex Betts.
And Alex, today we continue again on an epic journey that you introduced me on that I have been now buying every volume of, which has been totally addicting, just like the coffee you get for over at coffeeandacomic.com, where you get coffee with your Bagden Boards comics with a 15% discount down below. And I mean, what else can you be asking for? He actually has awesome stuff on there, such as... Man, I thought about some indie books that were going to be on there, and I totally spaced out all of them right when I said, like, I would say Sucker Punch, but that's not the title of that book at all. What's Pat O'Malley's book with Sumerian? Pop Scars. That's what it is. Actually, I was surprised to see that, but because he's with Sumerian and, Behemoth, those books are over there too. And we're going to be talking to Pat about getting our books, you know, the anthologies listed on his website as well. So you'll be able to get Apollo books over there pretty fucking soon. Besides that, if you want to not only support us by buying our books over at various shops across the country, you can support our Patreon. And our Patreon has tons of cool stuff that Alex knows all about.
Yes, so our Patreon has a couple different tiers. For just $1 a month, you can join our entry tier, get access to all of our book club episodes, which we've been plowing through The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay now. We're really, like, hitting our stride with that one. Just recorded a new episode of that, so that'll be definitely live by the time you see this episode. So we'll probably be in, like, parts 5 or 6 by the time this goes up, so definitely be sure to check that out. But then you can go up another tier and get access to our late night episodes, which those are super fun. You know, we'll just chilling for a couple minutes talking about questions that you guys might have that you can definitely submit, and then also, you know, just fun topics to discuss for a few minutes. And then going up another tier from that, you can subscribe to get some behind the scenes content, some sneak peeks at Apollo City's projects that are in the works, and then also you'll get digital copies of our books whenever those are available, whenever we have books coming out. And then the highest tier that we have is our hire an editor tier, where you can get either myself or Brandon to work with you on one of your projects if you have, you know, a single issue or something that you would like some help on, need someone to bounce it off of. You can hire one of us and we'll definitely work with you on whatever project it might be. So yeah, got a bunch of different stuff on our Patreon, ranging, starting all the way though at $1 a month. I mean, come on, you could, if you just want to support the show, get some cool bonus content, be sure to go check it out. Yeah,
I mean, is Apollo worth $1 a buck a month to you? Is it worth the price of a comic book a month to you? Like, any support helps us like crazy to make the show what it is and continue doing what we're doing. And what we're doing is pretty awesome, since we have the CyberSync Kickstarter coming up very soon. Yes. The pre-launch page is up, so you can be notified when it does launch. We're aiming for October 24th for it to be the launch date. We just met with all the creators. We're super excited for you to all see this. And if you check out our social media, you'll see tons of teasers of stories that are going to be in this book, along with some cool cover art for a variant and so many cool things. And aside from that, the punk rock anthology right above me, it's actually out now too. So if you would like a copy, please shoot me a message over at the Apollo City Comics page and we can work something out, or wait for announcements where we're going to be selling them on an online store or just being able to mail them out in general. But yeah, a lot of cool stuff, and submissions are open still for the Shadow Anthology, which is open until the end of October. And you know what? The end of October, October 31st, is the 5-year anniversary of Apollo City Comics, which is insane. Insane that I've been doing something
wild
consecutively for 5 years. You know what I mean? Like, whoa, pretty crazy, yeah. Pretty wild, super excited. We're going to plan something nice and fun. We'll get a bunch of friends in on it and just have a good time and talk about comics and fun stuff. But something else will be launching that day as well, and we can't quite say it yet, but it will be happening quite soon. But keep an eye out for a second Halloween surprise on Halloween, aside from our birthday. And then if you're in the Winchester area, I will be tabling at Four Color Fantasies, our local comic book shop, October 28th, slaying in the punk rock anthology, selling some posters, hanging out with some cool local creators and having a good time and some spooky vibes. So a lot of cool stuff going on with us. And now we continue our journey onto, dude, Wicked and Divine, Volume 4. This is the volume I've been waiting for, to be honest. I'm not going to lie. Like,
yeah, I remember, I figured you were going to like this volume a lot. You texted me after and you said you loved it. And I had to like mentally think about it for a second to remember what this volume ended on. And then I was like, oh, right. That's like this volume.
Dude, volume one was like a good introductory. We're going to throw you into this universe. You better hold on to your seats because we're here and it's happening. And it got my attention. Volume two was like, okay, we are everything you thought was going to happen in volume one clearly wasn't. And or in volume two clearly wasn't in a good way, like a lot of good twists and turns. And the way volume two ends, you're just like, well, you're better hold on to your seats because some crazy stuff's gonna happen. Volume three kind of kept us at pause, like we're gonna fill you in on some details. Let's fill in some blanks before we jump into this next scene, because it was much needed to make volume four as spectacular as it was. And it was just back-to-back, action-packed, like you said on the call before. But I don't know, just Jamie's artwork on this one was just so much fun. The storylines, the revelations, the fights, the battles, the people who come back, the people who we see die. Whew.
It's a lot. Yeah, it's good. It's great. So, I mean, I think you hit on one of the things. I mean, you hit on a couple of things that definitely happen with the story and the overall structure of the series. Like, very much volumes one and two are like showing you things aren't going to be the way that you might have expected, even if you didn't really know what to expect going in. And then volume three, though, very much is a slowdown and kind of like it just has to do a lot of character stuff that like makes the rest of the book work. Like there's no way you could do that character stuff not in that volume, but it does require it. It does slow it down a little bit. And it also, like, as amazing as those artists are in those issues, like it's not Jamie McKelvey on the book. It's not like McKelvey and Wilson, right? And so like getting another full volume of McKelvey and Wilson is just like, oh, this is amazing. And so that definitely like helps a lot and very much propels it forward. But we were talking a little bit before the call. There are kind of three like main narrative things as far as like big plot points that go down here, which is like Persephone coming back and like starting essentially the like civil war amongst the gods. And then just the complete showdown of the gods and like that going down and learning Ananke is just straight up planning to sacrifice Minerva, which is fun. And then the third thing is the, you know, final cliffhanger and ending of Persephone deciding to kill Ananke, and like now they have to go forward from there. Like those are the big three things, and you just get a lot of fucking fights and awesome gods thrown down like in between that. And you do get other story stuff, and like probably the biggest, I guess, narrative thing that happens is the issue that's right in the middle, where you get again a recontextualization issue. You see what happened to Laura, Persephone, when we thought that she was killed, which is Gillen again doing something that this book does multiple times. I'll give you a light spoiler now. This is not the last time that we get some crazy contextualization with some stuff. But he does it in a way that like how smoothly he's able to like flip things around and just showing that when we thought we were seeing Persephone or Laura die, like actually Inanna didn't die earlier on in that issue, and it's him that gets killed there whenever they're saving her. It's just such a like clean exchange of characters on the board and like where they're at in the story. And it's something that whenever you see it and you know, you're like, oh, this makes so much sense. But like while it's happening the first time, it's done in a way where like it's very much like it's literally like, look at this crazy explosion that's happening, and like you're focused on that and you take it at its face value, and then you learn later on that like that's not the truth. And then it's also really cool because it shows how smart Baphomet is in this issue too, where like whenever he's going to kill Inanna and he mentions and like he figures out that he knows that he's trying to kill him for his power, and he's like, oh, we're being played, like Ananke is manipulating us, and that's what's going on here, which is also such a great character moment. And then also a smaller character moment with him is the fact that we learn that he's not actually Baphomet, he's Negril, and he's just embarrassed about that and like doesn't want to go by that, and so he just calls himself Baphomet, which is just so funny. And so like yeah but there's just a couple of things like that. But yeah, go on.
It's kind of cool. We were just talking about this in book club, but it's like a very cinematic moment where you see that in cinema a lot, where like you'll see something play out and then they'll kind of reverse everything and then switch the camera angle on you. And because they switch the camera angle, you could see what happened on this side of it all. And that's what's like, okay, there was somebody right there. And then it shows what really played out and what really happened and everything. It's such a cinematic sequence. And, you know, as you study film, I've studied film, we kind of realize cool moments like that and great storytelling moments like that. And it's so funny that, like, I always thought it was Nurgle because of, like, Constantine, and I've always heard it pronounced Nurgle.
It probably is. I might be mixing up a couple letters.
I mean, I'm sure either pronunciation with some of these go either way, but it's kind of funny, like, realizing that, too, because Nurgle is, like, the main, like, demon that like messed up Constantine and did all these deals and deeds and whatnot. And I've been reading some Hellblazer this year as well, so like switching it back over to him, and I'm like, oh, this fucking loser like always gets his ass kicked no matter what. And it's not Baphomet, and it's just like, dude, you were almost the coolest one.
Yeah, it's like, so funny. It's also, I really like just going again to like showing the different things. It's like by omitting a couple lines of dialogue or a couple seconds of action or like someone else's perspective, it just completely, it changes the entire like perception of what the truth of like that moment is, which is just so like, it's so fascinating.
Real quick, what I really liked about this like volume, I don't know how it is on yours or the volumes you're reading, but this was the first volume where I got like a character checklist.
Yeah, this is the first issue that exists in, because it's the first time that like the full pantheon exists now.
Yeah, like, I was thinking that too. I mean, I think something like this for when you're doing pantheons would have been really helpful to at least lay out the players and like to make it really stick from the beginning. I think that's the only like big comment and like thing that could be really improved on this series, is that, you know, these are bizarre names, these are bizarre faces that we're like mixing together and symbols and everything. And if we would have had a cool, clear character map from the beginning, I think it would have made it easier to follow, because once I saw this and it clicked in, I felt like this volume was just like so much easier to like get through and whatnot. For some reason, I don't know, stuff like that just really does help like with clarity.
Yeah.
In books like these.
No, it definitely does. But yeah, one of the other things that I think is really interesting in the issue when we're learning what happened with Persephone is how she like attaches to Baphomet as well. And like their relationship is super interesting and has a lot of that ends up being a big old mess. Lots of stuff happens from that. But yeah, it's a really cool thing. And then just the biggest, I think, like recurring theme in this whole arc is just to like be careful who you put your trust in, because I mean, we literally saw like all of them trusting Anunnaki, and Persephone is almost killed for it, a couple of the other gods are killed for it, and she's now just completely manipulating the other ones that still believe her into leading into a ritual child sacrifice. So like that's just, you know, not optimal. But yeah, so what did you think about, like, because I'm interested what you think about Anunnaki's, I guess, manipulations in general, and whether or not you would believe her and what she's saying, and whether or not you think that, and like what you think about Persephone's decision, and like whether or not that was the right thing to do, or like keeping her alive would have been better, or like how did you think about that kind of all that unfolding?
Well, it's kind of like that new blood versus the old blood type of thing. You have Anunnaki who's been doing this for years and years and just sick of this shit and sick of these people and sick of the game and sick of the rituals and like just sick of all of it. And if she did have like a purpose and a point and a goal, like clearly it's been like strayed from or forgotten or just been like thrown so off track. She doesn't know what to do or how to control it. So like her point is just to like, I mean, just clear the board at this point, you know? And, you know, then you have Persephone, who's the young blood, who has like that reignited vision of some things, who, you know, has this new feeling of power. And it doesn't matter if she's just around for 2 years or anything, like this is like she sees things differently now, or she feels that she sees things differently and clearer and through the facade, and wants to change things, wants to change the everything, just the way Anunnaki wants to change how things have been. But Anunnaki's going after it a totally different radical way versus how Persephone wants to change things and like move things forward. So it's kind of like, do you do what has been done forever and now we're just going to set it on fire because it's just broken? Or do we go with all the new blood And that's what we're going to follow through. And that's how we're going to try to re-envision ourselves and change ourselves. So, I mean, it's kind of one of those things. I definitely wouldn't trust Inaki because she's being, you know, I'm sure she has, she does have a purpose. She brings it up at the very end. She's saving them from all, from something that's like an impending doom, essentially. Like, she's doing all this with a purpose to save everyone because it needs to be done, you know, but we're in the dark to what that is. So, like, her purposes mean nothing to us as we are, like, new blood coming into this whole situation where we're just like, no, you're just being fucked up. And because you won't communicate, because you're, like, old school and you don't want to fucking work together and, you know, show us the truth and you want to continue hiding things, like, of course we're going to fuck things up without knowing it, but that still makes it your fault for not, like, telling us from the start and being open about things.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting because... like, you have no way of knowing. It's also, it brings up shades of, I can't remember what episode we talked about it on recently, whether or not it was a Wicked episode or it was a different one, but it again brings up shades of Pascal's Wager, where, like, the risk you run by killing her, if she's right, is, like, the end of the world, essentially, right? Like, that's what you're gambling. Like, she's telling you that I'm doing this to stop the end of the world, like, you ungrateful, like, pieces of shit. This is all, like, I know this is terrible, but, like, trust me, this is the best way. And you're sitting here like, all right, well, but the way that you're going about this is, like, literally the worst ways that you could possibly be going around about this from a situational, contextual, like, we're people in the here now, like, dealing with this, and, like, and then arguing from, like, okay, you can argue that the greater good would be to sacrifice this child, but, like, you're not the child, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's, like, that kind of dilemma there. But then, yeah, you also have to be like, okay, well, she's been lying about everything, so we also don't know that she's telling the truth. And so, like, she could just be, like, completely and absolutely the worst person. Like, she could be lying about why she's doing the terrible things and still doing the terrible things, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's, like, one of those things that you have to just, like, gamble with. I laughed and I noticed this time reading it, and made a connection where one of her lines, because whenever she, like, first gets, like, you know, Persephone's, like, got her trapped and she's clearly defeated, it's funny, she literally goes through, like, all of the emotions in rapid succession. She tries to, like, bargain with them, and then it gets, like, super fucking pissed, and then eventually just, like, accepts it. But whenever she's yelling at them, she says, "Hell is you, children, forever," which is super funny because it's absolutely a reference to Jean-Paul Sartre, which is how he had the famous quote that says, "Hell is other people." And I know it's 100% a reference to Sartre, because in the recent Sense of Sinister, like, event that was going on in X-Men at the beginning of all of the X-Men issues, or not all the X-Men issues, but the X-Men issues that Gillen writes, there's a quote at the beginning of them, and the beginning of the quote in one of the Sense of Sinister issues was, "Hell is other people." And then it was, like, crossed out by Sinister, and he said something else, like, underneath it too, but, like, it's written by Gillen and referencing that line again. And so I read it this time and I was like, oh man, he really likes that idea. That's, which is, like, sick. I don't know if, are you familiar with that quote at all? No. Or, like, what he's implying? So no. It's "Hell is other people," and it comes from this story, it's a short story, I can't remember the name, I think it's called "The Waiting Room," and it's basically this, like, thought experiment type short story where it's like you wake up, or, you know, open your eyes or whatever, and you're in this, like, room. It's like a small, like, square room or whatever, and it's you and, like, three other people, and it's just, like, a waiting room, essentially, and you're just, like, sitting there, and, like, I can't remember if the story, like, establishes at the beginning that, like, you've died and this, like, you know, and this is what's next or whatever, but, like, the situation is that, like, you've died and this is what's next, and, like, essentially, like, you're with three other people and you're, like, sitting there, like, waiting, and, like, everyone's assuming that you're waiting to get to whatever the afterlife is going to be.
Oh, but it's like the Fugazi song, "Waiting Room" and shit. Yeah
okay. But, like, this all, that is, like, that is the afterlife, is you're just stuck here with these three other people that, like, you don't really like that much, and you just have to spend the rest of eternity, like, with them. And so the idea is that hell is having to deal with other people, and it's because Jean-Paul Sartre was very, like, brutish and not very happy and depressed little dude, so, like, he didn't really like the world and like others, and so, but it's a really interesting thing, and I think it's hilarious that, like, that has become literalized with Inaki, because she, like, has been condemned to spend eternity with all of these gods and, like, you know, managing them and stuff. So yeah, just interesting stuff there.
That's amazing. That's too cool. And that's the cool thing about Kieran is like how he puts things like that. Like, you know, I've been reading Preacher lately, and whenever there's a one line quote in the beginning of every issue, it's like a line from the story. And that's like a fun way to make it pop. And once you find that like context, it's like humorous.
I'm such a geek for that type of shit. I love it.
Yeah, I love that type of stuff. And just pulling it. I mean, the quote in Miracle Man number one from Thus Spoke Zarathustra.
Yeah, from it's Nietzsche.
Yeah, the Nietzsche. I mean, that's why I bought that book, was because of Alan Moore using that pull quote in Miracle Man. And so I was like, fuck, now I'm going to be into all this stuff because he's into all of it, you know? So doing that really does trigger a lot of, you know, fandom research and, you know, dormant and everything.
And I think it's also a very powerful tool because then you're bringing in, like, so much baggage. And I mean that in, like, a positive way. Like, with it, like, you're bringing so much context and emotion and, like, understood knowledge and, like, understood, of course, if you get the contextual reference and stuff, like, but then it's still, like, you know, I mean, even just taking the example we just went through, like, that adds so much to, like, just the single line that she's giving there, you know, like, whenever you know all that, you're like, oh man, this is operating on, like, so many different, you know, things. But yeah, it's great. And also, I feel like we haven't talked about it that much. We talked about it a little bit, but, like, the action in this volume is just insane. Like, seeing the gods throw down and the way that Gillen does it and Wilson's colors is just unreal. It's so good.
It's one of those things. Like, I love, you know, I always love seeing a giant robot in a comic and shit. But, like, I love, where's the line where it's just, like, it depresses me to know that someone somewhere is winking over this as we get to the big, like, you know, tentacle, like hentai,
facing like the tentacled like monster. It's so fun.
Yes, it's so great. But dude, the colors are really what get me, and that's what made it so much fun. And as you transverse from each part of the battle, you kind of know where you're at because of the color schemes, and that's how you could tell where you're jumping into different locations. And that's a good way to, you know, for transitions and everything. But what's cool about this too is that like this volume ends the way other volumes have already ended twice, and it's still like a fucking
and it still
blast.
Works. Yeah, it still like works because it just takes it in like a completely different direction where you're like, oh, I don't know what's gonna happen now.
It's one of those things that I'm realizing. So I've been, you know, reading Wicked and Divine and seeing repeated, you know, motifs over and over, but built upon. You know, it's the same circle, but it's just, you know, different characters. And I've been reading Invincible like crazy. I'm almost done, dude. I'm on issue like 106 right now. dude, yeah.
I mean, yeah, you've been at home the last week. That makes sense.
Yeah, I read a fuck ton of night COVID. So I was just like reading like crazy, dude. You know, Robert Kirkman uses the same motifs over and over and over, and same things happen again and again, but it's escalated at this point. It's changed, and it's done well enough to where enough change happens after each one and when each event reoccurs that it's a different outcome, and it does grow and enhance the story.
It just feels different enough.
Yeah, when you figure out that moment and you figure out how to do those things, that's great storytelling, and that's how you have continuous stories go on for 150 issues, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's so impressive to me, and it's one of my favorite things, and that's why, because, yeah, like, you're just seeing the same, like, one, using the same type of, like, narrative, like, punches, essentially, and then also, as I was saying earlier, just putting things in a different context, like, repeatedly. Are just my favorite things that this book does, aside from the art also just being an absolute banger. It does so much.
That's the thing, and this is such, you know, it feels like a shorter episode because like this is where really everything we saw kind of build up, connect and fight and happen, and now we've hit this bottle moment and it's re-exploded because now what's coming up next is a total mystery to me as we enter volumes 5 and 6, but I know they're called Imperium Part 1 and 2. Yeah. Imperial Phase Part 1 and 2. So I'm super curious what that means now that Anaki's not part of this. And I mean, the last, you know, they're asking, like, what do we do next, I believe, is the last lines. And she's like, whatever we want.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, which is also interesting. So we lose Anonki before the halfway point of this. Well, actually, we lose her right at the halfway point in the series because there are 45 numbered issues. And so there's 22. Is the end of 22 is where we lost her. So she makes it through half of the book. Yeah, it's funny, though. You were talking about how, like, this is very much the culmination and buildup of everything that's, like, been going on so far, which is, you know, you would assume so. That's generally how the stories work. But in one of my, like, breakdowns I had written a while ago, I mentioned that, like, the issues are, like, mostly just action. But I was like, it's definitely earned the, like, self-indulgent, just, like, having all these gods throw down, like, by this point in the story. You know, like, you're 20 issues deep. So I feel like it's definitely very much earned and also super satisfying to just see just crazy battles.
I'm literally going to read the next volume this week so we can record the next episode. I'm so excited. Between that and Die, I don't know what to pick up first. Like,
Gillen doesn't miss. Gillen does not miss. I'm so glad that I've already read Wictive, so I can, like, get... I'm just waiting on my copy of Volume 2 of Die to arrive in the mail. I have Volumes 3 and 4, which was such a tease that those got here.
Such a tease. I might... I mean, dude, I did it. For those who question me, I did buy the cover of this.
I want it so badly.
It's so beautiful. But coming up on Apollo City Comics, we have Akira Volume 1, Black Hammer Volume 1, Die Volume 2, Wicked and Divine Volume 5, Miracle Man Volume 2.
Miracle Man something. That number is
issue 5.
Fucking terrible. One of the issues of Miracle Man. We'll figure it out when we get there.
Yeah, it's one of those big mysteries. And then Book Club, we're wrapping up the last few issues of Cavalier and Clay. That'll be done in October. So we should be starting up Super Folks either mid-October, early November. So, hey, we'll be there. And then after that, you know, holidays, where we typically kind of take a break after our big anniversary and things get sporadic. We'll do a Thanksgiving episode probably for Thanksgiving, as always. And I don't know. That's kind of it. Keep track of all of our actual comics we're putting out.
Yeah. CyberSync pre-launch page is live. Be sure to go check that out. There'll be a link in the description. Our Patreon. Also, be sure to go check that out. I think that's all the stuff for now.
I think that's it. Thanks for hanging.
Hell yeah.